Welcome to Bedford County Speaks, the region's only locally produced public affairs program. Every Saturday at this time, Bedford County Speaks introduces community leaders, interesting topics, and people making a difference in Bedford County. Bedford County Speaks is presented exclusively by News Talk 1310 WBFD. Now, here's your host, Lloyd Broach.
Thank you, Matt DeFazio, and good morning to you. Welcome to Bedford County Speaks, the weekly public affairs program over News Talk 1310 WBFD. Today's program is presented by Thomas Chevrolet Subaru, saving you time, money, and worry for over 100 years, and by Homewood at Springhouse Estates. I'll return shortly with today's guest, Dr. Carl Werner, as Bedford County Speaks continues.
Attention race fans, Thomas Chevrolet is giving away a NASCAR Racecation for two. Test drive a Chevy now through September 1st at Thomas Chevrolet in Bedford, and you'll be entered to win a Racecation of a lifetime that includes riding shotgun with race car legend Dale Jr., 5 nights hotel accommodations, tickets to watch the big NASCAR races at Charlotte Motor Speedway, and the NASCAR Hall of Fame. Visit thomaschevrolet.com to find your ride. Thomas Chevrolet, located along Business Route 220 in Bedford. All details at the dealership.
At Homewood at Springhouse Estates, Tim Turner is the new executive chef, and you're in for a real treat.
This is still good food, and I think that that's what helps bring a little bit more of the fine dining, but it still gives you that home country cooking where you can make a nice steak and potato dish, still make it taste great.
You don't have to live here to eat here. Call Homewood now for reservations at 623-0349 to learn what's cooking tonight. Homewood at Springhouse Estates, where every day is Independence Day.
This is Tim Harkle Rhodes, CEO at Conemaugh Nason Medical Center in Roaring Spring, Pennsylvania. Let's head back to Bedford County Speaks right here on News Talk 1310 WBFD.
We've interviewed, as you know, a lot of people, everything from the FedEx man to Lieutenant Governor of Pennsylvania. But I have a very special guest with me today. His name is Dr. Carl Werner. And you may know this name because he practices here at UPMC right here in the borough of Bedford. But we're not going to talk about his practice at UPMC right this second. We're going to talk about two very interesting experiences and interests he has. I was going to call the show something like Medicine or Music or Meds and Music, but I don't know. Maybe we'll pick something else up. But Dr. Werner is a very accomplished young man. He is a New Yorker. You'll pick that up when we hear from speak. And he is not from Bedford, and I am not from Bedford, so we're in good company today. Usually I'm the interloper and the guy that came from far away. But Dr. Werner has a fascinating career, and first of all, I want to thank you very much for talking to me today. I appreciate you taking time to do this.
It's a pleasure to be on the air and to smell the sweet air of Bedford.
Well, I agree with you on that. You are a dyed and wool New Yorker.
For many years.
And you grew up in Manhattan?
In Queens. But I trained, I went to medical school in Manhattan. Okay. And trained at St. Luke's Hospital in Manhattan and was living in Manhattan for the last 15-16 years.
And I understand your parents were also physicians, is
right.
that correct?
Right. My father was a very famous pathologist who unfortunately died when I was 7. But then my mother, who he decided to marry when she was an intern, took over 4 of his 11 positions in hospitals in New York City.
Boy.
And he actually was a little, unfair to my mother because for the first 2 years that she was practicing full-time as a attending pathologist, he forgot to pay her.
Oh, he forgot.
Yeah, my mother told me this when she retired from Flushing Hospital.
We would call that something else today, but he just happened to let it slip his mind.
Well, I was dancing with her on the floor at the Flushing Hospital party that was celebrating her career at Flushing Hospital in New York City, and she said, you know, she missed 2 years of her retirement because her husband had forgotten to put her on the payroll.
All right. Well, Dr. Werner has written a book. And when did you write this book?
I wrote it at the urging of a good friend of mine that I had met in Florida, who is known as Mr. Pipe. Mm-hmm. He's one of the leading polymer chemists in the world. And actually, your 7-Up bottle that went from glass to green plastic, he formulated the color. And he's formulated the color for many things you see in the world today. His name is Gray Wright. And we met by serendipity at a restaurant. I was telling him a funny story about a nursing home patient who went out to eat at a restaurant and insisted that he wanted Dover sole. And when the Dover sole came to him, he got upset because he hated Dover sole because his memory had gone. So when I told the story to Gray, we started connecting, and then he liked classical music, and so we started connecting again. And Gray and I developed a book club at the Ritz-Carlton in Sarasota, because I was working down there. And every 2 weeks, we'd meet at the Verdura restaurant at the old Ritz-Carlton, and we would discuss books. Because he read about 5 or 6 books a week. I read about 2.
Mm.
And he inspired me to write the book.
Well, the book is called Tales of ER. And you have been in the emergency medicine biz, if you will, I guess it's a profession, whatever you want to call it, for many years. And what do you think the biggest thing has changed since you started back in 76? What's the biggest change that's happened inside an emergency room?
Well, I think the biggest change that happened in the emergency room is that everything has become formalized and organized. Because when I started in the emergency room, it was completely free-for-all. And you had everybody from OBGYN doctors to pediatricians trying to do emergency medicine. And a lot of times they didn't even know what they were doing. In fact, I met a doctor up here in practice who was actually, I think, he was a surgeon. He said he did emergency medicine when he was here many years ago, when he started out in practice, and he had to have the nurses read the EKGs for him because, you know, people didn't have a general understanding of the totality of emergency medicine. Yeah. So now it's become a much more organized and focused practice, but a lot of the excitement also is gone too because, it has gotten regimented as well as organized.
Well, most people are familiar with this topic probably through television shows like MASH. So how much truth is in that kind of a TV show when you see that stuff?
Well, I think there's a certain degree of validity to those television shows. But by serendipity or circumstance, I've never watched ER or those television shows except for once.
Okay.
And it actually served me very well because I watched a portion of a ER sequence where the medical student was sure that somebody had chest pain that was significant, and the attending, the residents all poo-pooed him and wanted to send him home. And by circumstances, the patient didn't get out of the emergency room as he was supposed to, and the medical student kept him around, and he did have a heart attack after all.
Mm.
And that one show that I watched had a very impactful effect on me because many years later, when I was practicing in Glens Falls, which is a busy hospital in the Adirondacks, I had this woman come in, and it was Glens Falls is a really big, busy hospital in Glens Falls, New York. A 500-bed hospital, one of the major hospitals in the lower Adirondacks. And I used to work there in the summers when their census used to go from 100 to 300 a day.
Oh, my word.
And they would hire extra docs like myself to come up and work.
Right.
And they had, this was in the middle of June before they had put the extra staffing on. And they also have Americade there, where they have about 10,000 bicycle people come up for 2 weeks. So it gets really busy.
Sounds like a madhouse.
It's a madhouse. I've seen lawyers and policemen with fractured hips because they all drive in their motorcycles.
Right.
It's a crazy place. So I was working there in the middle of June, and it was crazy with all kinds of trauma and everything. You know, there was all kinds of things going on. But there was this old lady who had come in, who had been seen by a cardiologist twice, an internist once in the past 2 weeks, and had vague chest pains. And everybody thought that, there was nothing wrong. And I saw her. I couldn't find anything wrong. And I did a cardiogram, the initial blood work, and I was just about to send her home when I said, I just thought of that that case of ERHC.
Really?
I swear to God. So I said, what I'm going to do is I'm going to keep her in observation, which I had actually done a lot of the work in the 1980s. We had written a book on observation medicine. And I said, and actually my book was that we had written was in that emergency room. And we had beds in the back, six beds. So at 1 o'clock in the morning, instead of her going home, which I had actually initially told the nurse to send her home, we kept her back. And at 6 o'clock in the morning, she had chest pain. I got another cardiogram. She had a big heart attack. And an hour later, she arrested and died.
Oh, my goodness.
So, I mean, I owe it to that one ER show that I saw on television, that always be particularly careful of the most innocuous sounding chest pain.
What kind of stories are in your book that that really stick out?
Well, I think...
I've only got a minute or two, so we can't do all of them. But is there a big one or some experience you had that was really profound?
I think
profound?
It started out... One of the most interesting stories was, of course, when I was in training at St. Luke's in New York. And one of the things we did in training, we spent 3 6-week rotations in the emergency room because they didn't have emergency medicine doctors at that time. Then we spent 2 months as a first-year resident, then 6 weeks as third-year resident supervising the emergency room. So I saw fascinating things. One of the most fascinating things I saw was one of the best cases I had when I was in training was a guy who would come in cardiac arrest. And at that time, we used to think that sticking a needle in the heart and injecting with epinephrine would make the heart rebound and people survive. I mean, everybody's seen John Travolta in that movie do that routine to his sidekick who took too much cocaine.
Mm-hmm.
I was faced with a person in cardiac arrest, a gentleman who was also intoxicated, and I was an intern, so I hadn't done this very often. And the resident says, stick the needle in the heart. So I said, oh, okay. I knew vaguely what to do. So I stick the needle in, about to inject it. The guy suddenly jumps off the stretcher. And we resuscitated. I think it was the sticking the needle in that got him going.
Do it for me.
But, we had everything from, amazing cases of people coming to life after you thought they were dead, to opening up chests in the emergency room. It was a very exciting place.
Well, our guest is Dr. Carl Wern, and you can tell that his life's certainly been exciting, still is. I'm seeing him here in his doctor's office today in Bedford, and he told me he had a fascinating day of treating different diseases. So it's I'm not a doctor, so I don't know what that would be like, but wow. I want to remind you today that the program is brought to you in part by a new sponsor of ours, SAMA, the Southern Alleghenies Museum of Art. They have a brand new, beautiful museum right here in Bedford on Pitt Street. If you have not seen this in the former Anderson House, you have got to see it. It is absolutely beautiful. They refurbished the entire building at great expense, and there's a first-rate museum in Bedford now by the Southern Allegheny Museum of Art. This is one of their 5 locations that they have in other places such as Altoona and Johnstown. So get over there and look for them. They have a website, just SAMA will do it, the Southern Allegheny Museum of Art. And also, obviously, our other sponsors, Thomas Chevrolet and Homewood at Spring House Estates. We are going to return with Dr. Wern, and when we come back, we're going to take a little bit of a gear switch, and we're going to move into his world of music, which I think in really his heart of hearts is something he really wants to talk about when Bedford County Speaks continues.
Hello, I'm Mark Thomas. We hope you're enjoying this week's Bedford County Speaks. We're pleased to sponsor this community effort every week. Sometimes people ask us how we do business. Well, it's simple. When a family firm like us has been around for over 100 years, you learn a lot. For example, we know you don't care for haggling, so instead, we discount our vehicles up front to remove all the guessing. We also pay our sales consultants on volume rather than on the price of the car or truck. That way, everyone works to get you the vehicle you want instead of the one we may want to sell you. Thomas Chevrolet Subaru offers transparent financing with protection options to fit your budget. In addition, when you buy a car or truck from us, you get free state inspections for life, free car washes for life, and great warranties, which remove all the worry. And we'll even buy your trade for cash. So stop by our showroom today and check out our beautiful supply of Chevrolet cars, tough Chevy trucks, and those fabulous worry-free Subarus. That's the Thomas Promise. To learn more, visit us on Route 220 or thomaschevrolet.com.
Now, let's head back to Lloyd Roach and Bedford County Speaks.
You're listening to Bedford County Speaks. My name is Lloyd Roach, and with us today is my guest, Dr. Carl Wern. And Dr. Wern is an internist here. Is that right? You're an internist, right?
Internist,
among
right.
other things. And but he spent a lot of his career in emergency medicine, as you've already heard. But I want to tell you about his other career. This is the career that he is very ebullient about. So I said, how many CDs do you have? He says, 35. So he's approaching the Beatles here, but this guy, you're a cellist.
Cellist, right.
So what on earth possessed the guy from Queens who goes to medical school at NYU to start playing the cello? Did you do this as a child?
Well, I did this. Well, I growing up, I was fortunate. I had a mother who was a pathologist who, outside of pathology, the next thing she loved the most was music, and then her children, I think.
Yeah, so you're
she was of Polish extraction, and she growing up, she heard everybody from Rachmaninoff to all the great players in New York in the 20s and 30s, and so she exposed me to music, and the thing that was the kicker, when I was very young, there's a famous quintet by Dvorak that has a cello solo at the beginning of it. And she had the 1950 recording by a famous group from Italy, and I fell in love with the cello. She didn't let me play the cello, though. I had to start on the piano. And it's only after 3 or 4 years of being a drag and, you know, saying, I want to play the cello. Finally, she let me play the cello. And fortunately, we had a family.
Now, wait a minute. You're telling me this Jewish kid from New York is telling his mother he wants to play something that looks like a violin? Get out of here.
You know, she
come on.
she didn't think she wanted me to play the piano because I was good at it.
Yeah.
And she played the piano. So,
right.
So, but fortunately, we used to vacation in Wading River on Long Island, and mm-hmm. one of our neighbors was named Paul Winter. He was the youngest violinist to be in the NBC Symphony of Toscanini.
Really?
And so he listened to my pleadings, and one of his colleagues in the freelance business in New York. They used to, you know, do background music for commercials, and they used to make a lot of money at it. There was a cellist called David Sawyer, who was out of Philadelphia, actually, who went to Curtis and then went into the freelance business and was very successful in that. But he was my teacher for about 5 years until he formed the Guarneri String Quartet that became the leading string quartet in the world for about 30 years.
So who have you played with?
I play with everybody.
Well, tell me some of the performances. You ever been to Carnegie Hall?
I've been to Carnegie Hall.
Who did you play with
him? I played in Carnegie Recital Hall a couple of times with one of my pianists who's in the New York City Ballet. But I've mostly done when I was in Aspen, Colorado, I was at the Copper Kettle playing string quartets for my supper, and Isaac Stern was in the audience. He decided to sit in and play.
You play with Isaac Stern?
I played Isaac Stern, yeah. I played the Opus 59 Beethoven C major quartet.
Didn't make faces at you or anything
No. And then I was at Aspen for 4 or 5 years, and I used to eat lunch with James Levine all the time. Mm-hmm. He was a student. He was 21, 22. He was a student conductor, and I was a student, and my roommate was Franklin Cohen, who's now principal clarinet in the Cleveland Orchestra.
Let me ask you something. You've been a physician forever, and I've always heard that there are definite therapeutic advantages to music.
Absolutely.
Do you subscribe to that?
There's no question that music soothes the savage beast, and Mozart makes your mind smarter. There's no question about it. And there's a close physician-music relationship. When I was in Connecticut, the head of chief of pathology, Sonnenbluch, at University of Connecticut, was a viola player. I played many times with him. I played at Aspen. I played in the festival orchestra with a lot of famous people.
So all of these experiences with all of these astonishing musicians, not the least of which would be Isaac Stern and Mr. Levine, you still have this this interest and passion for this.
Absolutely.
So do you play the cello to this day?
I have cut back the last year or two because of some arthritic problems, but I still play, yeah.
So have you ever played cello for your patients?
Absolutely.
I have,
yeah.
So
actually, for some of the walk-in patients, when I was director of the emergency room in Connecticut, I also had a walk-in clinic, and I used to bring my cello because it was slow some days, and I play a little bit for my patients.
So sometimes you'd be out in the lobby playing the cello, and they throw money in your hat or anything like that? Or,
I used to play a lot when I lived in Connecticut later on in life. My wife at the time was a viola player, and we used to play in a lot of the churches. I used to do Handel Messiahs. I used to do Brahms Requiem. I used to play about 40, 50 concerts a year.
Well, what interests me is that today you don't hear too much about people like you doing this. You know, everybody wants to play pop music, and classical music, of course, is timeless. It's almost infinite in its variety.
Well, I think the thing about classical music is that it takes a while to learn to appreciate it. I didn't like Brahms. I didn't like a lot of composers. I liked Mozart and Beethoven when I first started out, and I didn't like anything past 1900. Now I even like modern composers sometimes.
Mm. Are there any modern composers that you play on your cello?
Yeah, there's a great cello sonata by Samuel Barber.
Oh, really?
That he wrote when he was a student at Curtis. And actually, when at my first year at Aspen, I studied this sonata, and the cellist David Cole, whose father Orlando Cole was the head of cello at Curtis for almost 70 years, we went over that sonata, and I learned it. David Cole, fabulous cello player.
Chris Barber, of course, is a Pennsylvania resident. He's from Westchester, Pennsylvania, actually, and they have a building with a plaque on the front.
I didn't know that.
Birthplace, yes. So he's from Pennsylvania,
fabulous.
From Westchester, just outside of Philadelphia. So
fabulous
everybody knows
composer.
Samuel Barber. And, yeah, another guy that came out of the shadows. You know, he was all of a sudden, there he was. And who would ever think?
He wrote a great cello concerto, wrote a great violin concerto. And actually, I studied with Rhea Garbasova at Aspen, and she was one of the people who premiered his cello concerto.
Dr. Carl Wern is our guest, and Dr. Wern works currently for the UPMC system here in Bedford. And is this kind of a semi-retirement job almost?
Yes,
because
definitely semi-retirement.
You're not going to work too hard here, right?
No,
to play your cello a lot. You know?
Well, but I'm enjoying patients more than I ever have, because remember, in the emergency room, you see them and treat them. You know, you treat them, see them, and treat them, whatever. Yeah. Here, they become part of your life. It's a wonderful thing.
So you see them coming back.
Yeah.
Well, that's. Do you like your new role, kind of as a country doctor? Because that's
much
kind
better.
Of what you are,
much
yeah.
better.
Yeah.
Much better. I must say that also the people around here are very very varied in their interests. Farmers teach me about things on the farm. I didn't realize that the soil temperature had to be 55 degrees to grow crops.
Now you know. And I'll bet they're more polite in many cases, because you probably meet some not so nice people when they march into the emergency room demanding service.
You know, I think the biggest problem in the emergency room is that people are very impatient.
Yes.
And there's only one time. I was working down in Florida, and I had this black gentleman who, you know, a poor white black gentleman in Winter Haven. And I went into the room, and he says, "Thank you, doctor, for seeing me so soon." Because virtually every other patient is like, "Why haven't you come in sooner?"
I'd love to talk more about this, but we're out of time. You have been terrific. I want to thank you very much for talking to us. And as we sort of trail off into the sunset, you're going to listen to a little bit of Dr. Wern's work.
Bacchianus Brasileiris by Villa-Lobos. The Bacchianus Brasileiris, which is for soprano and just cellos alone, for seven cellos, a solo, seven cellos and soprano. And it's based on a Bach a theme, and this is the arrangement for cello and piano.
Well, thank you. I certainly couldn't have done any better than that. I appreciate it very much, and thanks for talking to me today. It was really great. great to have you. Bedford County Speaks was presented this morning by Thomas Chevrolet Subaru, saving you time, money, and worry for over 100 years. And by Homewood at Springhouse Estates, where every day is Independence Day. I look forward to joining you next time, right here on News Talk 1310 WBFD. Until then, enjoy your weekend. This is Lloyd Roach.
Thanks for listening to Bedford County Speaks. This program is heard every Saturday at this time over News Talk 1310 WBFD. If you would like to hear this program again, visit bedfordcountyspeaks.com and click Listen Here. Bedford County Speaks is a production of the News and Public Affairs Department of News Talk 1310. If you or your organization would like to appear on the show, visit our website, bedfordcountyspeaks.com, for contact information. Thanks for listening, and have a great week.